Welcome to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Skylar Jeremias. On this week's episode, we're discussing the recent U.S. launch of BioViz, the first ophthalmology biosimilar and the first biosimilar to reference Lucentis in the United States, the European Union, the United Kingdom, and Canada. The launch is signaling that big changes and savings are in store for the ophthalmology space, especially for patients with neovascular age-related macular degeneration, macular edema, and diabetic retinopathy, among other conditions. Today, I am joined by Dr. Sonia T. Osqui, Vice President of Biosimilars at Cardinal Health and a member of the Center for Biosimilars Advisory Board. Dr. Osqui is a big advocate for biosimilar adoption and the need for more education materials for providers and patients, especially in disease areas that do not have much experience with biosimilars, including the ophthalmology space. So Dr. Osqui, welcome to the show. Are you excited for the prospect of more ophthalmology biosimilars, and are there any others besides the plethora of ranibizumab products in the pipeline that you're looking forward to seeing the most?
I'm very excited about more ophthalmology biosimilars coming to market for multiple reasons. And first and foremost, it is expanding the opportunity of biosimilars into additional therapeutic areas. So when we think more broadly, we've heard the statistics that there could be aggregate savings from biosimilars over $133 billion by 2025. In order to achieve that, you need to have more biosimilars and greater adoption and acceptance. So having ophthalmology now have biosimilar treatment options is a very exciting milestone. So in addition to the ranibizumab biosimilars, which of course now we have the first one approved and launched, and there's more anticipated to come to market, the next big opportunity in ophthalmology is going to be with the aflibercept biosimilars, which should come to market around earliest 2023, but could be 2024. And that is a huge opportunity in ophthalmology, because between ranibizumab and aflibercept, these are the two most commonly used anti-VEGF agents used in retina conditions such as neovascular age-related macular degeneration.
Now, BioViz launched at a 40% discount compared to Lucentis, which is already larger than some of the discounts we've seen for biosimilars launching in other disease states. Do you think this much of a discount will be enough to encourage providers and pharmacists to prescribe this to their patients over the originator?
The discount for this biosimilar was actually considered very strong, especially when you compare it to other medical benefit biosimilars that have launched previously. So it's clear that there was a strong pricing strategy upon launch with this product. However, I believe adoption is still going to be dependent on multiple factors. Of course, pricing is a big one, but especially in the medical benefit space, reimbursement is going to be a huge influential factor on the ability to adopt and utilize these agents. So payer coverage naturally is going to be a big one. And even other economic considerations like patient out-of-pocket cost or those patient support programs that can help patients afford these treatments, making sure that there's a same level of support felt by providers and patients with this biosimilar is going to be important. But even taking away or to the side economics, you still have the clinical considerations where you naturally need clinical confidence in these agents by both providers and patients and other stakeholders to ensure successful adoption of these agents. So I think it's going to take a lot of different factors to really determine how impactful that pricing discount strategy is going to be.
What should health systems and ophthalmologists be doing now to ensure that BioViz and any subsequent biosimilars that come are accessible to patients and create savings?
Given this is the first biosimilar approved in a new therapeutic area of ophthalmology, probably one of the strongest steps that health systems, provider, physician office, all these stakeholders can take in preparing for these agents is having very proactive and strong education efforts. So championing education efforts with the right stakeholders, so there's a strong understanding of what these agents are, how biosimilars are approved, and try to tackle any potential misperceptions or hesitation from the, I'll say, scientific rigor associated with these agents. We've seen this through market research that Cardinal Health has conducted over several years, starting in 2015 in oncology, that there tends to be this journey every time a biosimilar enters a new therapeutic area where there's greater hesitation for adopting biosimilars. And then over time, the familiarity and the perceptions of the acceptance increases. And it actually mimics what we see with market adoption and market share in the, with these biosimilar agents. So I really do believe that education is a key, key strategy, especially in ophthalmology, since we're entering into this space for the first time.
The ophthalmology space is a tricky one to navigate as far as pharmaceuticals go, as many of these medications are injected directly into the eye. How has education on biosimilars evolved in this space to ease patient and provider concerns about the safety of these agents?
The educational needs around biosimilars have continued to evolve as we have more experience in the U.S. market across different therapeutic areas. In ophthalmology specifically, given it's the first time we're experiencing ophthalmology biosimilars, there's, again, strength and need to focus on what are these biosimilar agents, how are they approved through the FDA regulatory approval process, and building clinical confidence with the regulatory terms and the scientific rigor and the totality of evidence that goes into approval of these agents. I would say the evolution of education has evolved since 2015 when we had our first oncology biosimilar and first biosimilar in the market, in that there's more data, there's more resources available to support the education process. And not just data, real world evidence, et cetera, in other therapeutic areas, but resources overall. We've seen FDA take a lot of strong efforts in developing educational tools, not only for providers, but for patients as well. And this includes the development of a curriculum program that could be embedded into educational programs like med schools, pharmacy schools, nursing schools, et cetera. So there's more tools available for us to use to help educate and equip the right stakeholders with the information they need to successfully manage and utilize these products.
Now, ophthalmology is also an interesting space for biosimilars because all the countries that have them are on the same playing field, essentially. With oncology or rheumatology, the U.S. could look to the decades worth of data from the EU's experience with biosimilars, but in this case, the EU, Canada, and the U.S. all only have BioViz, and the U.K. is the only nation with two ranibizumab biosimilars. What are your thoughts on this?
I am a big advocate for leveraging any data and real-world evidence associated with biosimilar utilization, whether it's domestic or international. Now, ophthalmology is a newer space for several countries, like you mentioned. However, there is a ranibizumab biosimilar that's been used in India for a few years now. So there is some data and recent real-world evidence study has been published regarding that agent. So although limited, there is some out there that, which again, I think we should use any data that's available and experience. However, what I think this also does is creates a significant opportunity for the U.S. to be a source of developing data and having real world evidence to support future use of biosimilars in ophthalmology. So this is where healthcare stakeholders really have the opportunity to build the infrastructure and the databases and the approach to structuring the use of these biosimilars and capturing the data so it can be shared amongst additional stakeholders internationally as well. So this is one of, I would say, an opportunity for the U.S. to be used as a reference with the experience of these products. So it does open up a big opportunity. And I do believe that this is one of those areas that the FDA has talked about as well, where there's a big need and again, opportunity to leverage data sources that is outside our direct regions that we practice in.
So Dr. Osqui, you gave a talk at this year's Asembia Specialty Pharmacy Summit, during which you discussed that the U.S. is entering round two, as you called it, of biosimilar activity, meaning that the U.S. is heading towards more biosimilars on the market, bigger savings, and better adoption rates. How will the ophthalmology space factor into that round two of activity?
Ophthalmology is going to play a key role in this, what I call round two of biosimilars activity in the U.S. And when I say round two, it's really because we're at a point where we're going to have significant expansion of opportunity biosimilars in additional therapeutic areas like ophthalmology and in additional sites of care like retail pharmacy, specialty pharmacies, and more of the pharmacy benefit space too. So really exciting time. Now, I think the ophthalmology space specifically is a huge part of this next phase of biosimilars activity as we look at the treatments that have biosimilar candidates or treatment options in the pipeline. So of course we talked about ranibizumab, but when we look at aflibercept, that's an even larger, I would say, economic opportunity in ophthalmology. In fact, if we look back at the top selling pharmaceuticals in 2021, and even looking at the top 10, Eylea made number 9 on that list, according to the latest Fierce Pharma list. So these are not small opportunities. This really could have a meaningful impact in bringing healthy competition for some of the most critical treatment options, therefore lowering costs and enhancing patient accessibility and affordability of these treatments.
Now, as you mentioned, we are expecting several aflibercept biosimilars referencing Eylea, at least 7 of which are expected to come in the next couple years, a number that rivals that of the adalimumab biosimilars that are coming in 2023. How do you think the experience of ranibizumab biosimilars and adalimumab biosimilars will shape health plan policies going forward when these Eylea biosimilars eventually become available?
The ranibizumab biosimilar experience is likely going to help create a pathway for more ophthalmology biosimilars, naturally, just given the experience that retina specialists, practice administrators, and others will have when it comes to evaluating biosimilars for utilization with their patients. So having the experience of understanding the clinical considerations, the economic, the operational, when you think about inventory management, the prior auth process, I mean, all of this is going to build, I'll say, organizational muscle to continue to evaluate biosimilars for adoption as more come to market. Now, the adalimumab, of course, is a different therapeutic area. However, the number of adalimumab biosimilar candidates is not too far off now from what we see with the aflibercept biosimilar. So I think in that regard, that experience is going to give insights into what a market could look like when you have such a significant amount of biosimilar candidates that may be coming into the market or seeking to get into the market within a span of a year or so. However, that is a product that will have majority presence under the pharmacy benefit. So you're going to see different considerations for adoptions there. However, I would say it's not a coincidence that aflibercept has so many candidates like adalimumab does, given where it falls in the top selling pharmaceuticals in the country.
And lastly, do you have any concluding thoughts?
One of the most exciting aspects of having ophthalmology biosimilars come to market for me is really twofold. One of them is the immediate and I would say almost short-term opportunity of having increased competition so you can lower the cost, ultimately with the aim of enhancing patient affordability and accessibility of these treatments. So that hands down is the key promise of biosimilars. But what this also is doing, and this is the other part that's so exciting, and this is part of the intent of having biosimilars in the U.S., is through healthy competition is really stimulating additional innovation and treatment options for ophthalmology. We see that already, through competition that we're having and the additional biosimilar candidates in the pipeline, we're seeing advancements and new innovative treatment options for retinal conditions, whether it's through device capabilities or extending dosing intervals, for example, which is really important when it comes to retina conditions. It is exciting to see that because I know, none of us want to go blind. And to see further advancements in ophthalmology care is one of the most exciting things about having increased competition in this space.
Dr. Oswi, thank you so much for joining me today to talk about all of these topics. And thank you to our audience for tuning into this episode of Not So Different. I know we took a pretty big break from posting, so we're truly thankful to all of you for continuing to give this podcast some love. You can find additional information on everything we discussed today in the show notes, and until next time, you can visit us at centerforbiosimilars.com.